Time now to go to Sunday school with the professor.
Hey, professor, take it easy, will you?
Giants third base coach Ron Wotus with Marty Lorenz.
I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper.
On your home of Giants baseball.
Like the way you think.
KNBR 680, the sports leader.
I'll tell you, it's the best open in the history of baseball.
It makes me want to watch the movie again. Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield.
I love the movie. Come on, I could tell you every line from
really?
The movie.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it in years.
No, it's the best. Every winter, I watch at least twice every year. It's great. All right. Longfellow, yeah, he's in the pool and all that. Oh, my goodness.
See, I don't remember it as well as you do, so I need to watch it again.
All right. Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Marty. How are you doing this morning?
Pretty good. Ready for the game today. And I said it when we opened up, it's been an entertaining series. And I know, look, you're up 6-0, you lose 7-6. We'll talk about that a little bit in a second. But you're up 5-0, and now it's 5-3, and you got Melanson in to save Smith. And boy, thank God the kid who was up was a rookie who hadn't been up a little bit, because that's a pressure situation. So, well, what a couple of games.
Yeah. Your torture, right?
Really?
I mean, it's back to the torture days, the way these games played out. We should have had both of them. As you like to say, that's baseball. Thank goodness we held on yesterday to win that game because it got a little too close for comfort there at the end. So those runners moving up to second and third. Now a base hit is a tie game. It's not a home run that ties the game. It's a little riskier to be in that situation. So Smitty's done a great job for us. He really has pushed, thrown into this closer role. And the job he's done for us throughout the year has really been admirable.
My new favorite player is on Texas now. Carmen, who is it?
Joey Gallo.
Yeah, it's my new favorite player.
Well, he's a big, strong kid, isn't he? And he takes a whack at it. Huh?
Come on.
Yeah, no, he's a talented player. And it's unusual to see them put him in center field, right? When's the last time you saw a center fielder of that size and strength?
Seriously, 250 pounds he's played center field, and he ends up putting one over his own head.
Yeah.
Into Bonds territory in center field. And look, well, this is the game today. He's got 170 strikeouts, whatever, 30-some. He has almost as many home runs as singles.
Right.
But this is the game today, and I don't know. He can reach the seats here, I'll tell you that. Then he got the base hit and sprained his ankle and made it down to first base and got another hit yesterday. So the Texas Rangers, it's an interesting team.
Well, they're dangerous.
Yeah.
They're dangerous. They have a lot of power. As you said, they can hit the long ball, and they have guys like Gallo and a few other guys in that lineup. Odor, I mean, he's a heck of a player. I know he had he's been very controversial in his career, but he plays hard. He's dangerous at the plate. He plays good into defense. He can steal a base. I don't know if he was an all-star for them this year or not, but watching him play, he's an all-star caliber player. There's no question about it. Let me ask you, the biggest center fielder I've seen that I can remember, and this would be a perfect question for you, Marty, talking about big guys in center, was Dale Murphy with the Braves.
Okay, very good.
And he's
good.
Not close to the size that Gallo was. Can you recall anybody?
I'd have to think about it. The great center fielders are always, the Devon White, that looking
right.
like Jim Edmonds, those
right.
kind of guys. I'd have to think about it, honestly, about a center fielder. I mean, Mays was, 5'10". Mantle was about the same size. Duke Snider was a little bit taller there. But, yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah.
Rick Monday? How about Rick Monday?
Did he play a lot of center? I remember him, right? Did he?
Yeah. Rick Monday. How about Rick Monday?
Yeah. I see him up in the radio booth. I can't tell how big he is anymore.
I
didn't watch him play. But
he wasn't as heavy as Gallo.
Right. Gallo's it has to be, for me, the biggest, strongest center. I shouldn't say strongest, but the biggest, body frame and type playing center field that I've seen.
Yeah, interesting. So I find Texas interesting. I do. And I know you got to play against them and defend them, but I like the way Gallo plays. In the world today, you put up with 200 strikeouts for a guy who could hit the ball like that. That's what you look for.
Yeah, I mean, that's the American League. They pound the baseball. And obviously, Texas, if they get some pitching, they're going to be a dangerous club. That's been their bugaboo this year for them. But they have some talented offensive players. And, you know, typically we play a little different in the National League, but we're turning into the same thing, right? It's not the hitting, running, and the stealing and moving the ball. But I think somewhere along the line, we've talked about this before, you know, getting a guy in from third, you know, putting the ball in play is going to come back into the game, because the home runs and the strikeouts, I don't know. I don't know if it's a better brand. I don't think it's a better brand of baseball. I certainly don't. It takes away a lot of the beauty of the game, the things that I enjoy about it.
Yeah. Panic made an error Friday night, and let's go to school with the professor here on Sunday morning. And I know you've preached so many times, footwork, balance. What happened on that play? Now, he was deep and had to come in and make a play, but what happened?
Yeah, I mean, the ball to your right like that is always a difficult play when it's not hit real hard, because you got to come get it. And, you know, in his haste to come get the ball, he got a little bit of an in-between hop. And, you know, and then he went down with two hands, kind of, he really wanted to make the play instead of one hand. I thought maybe, and I haven't talked to him about it yet, but maybe with one hand he might have had a better opportunity. But, you know, you don't see Joe Panic miss that ball, whether it's two hands or one hand. That's a play he's made over his career, and that ball goes near his glove. It sticks in there. So it's a very humbling game. It happens to all of us, and it happens to the best players in the game. Once in a while that happens. So he got an in-between hop. It would happen, and then it becomes a more difficult play.
Yeah, I thought the footwork maybe wasn't as set as you like to see it, as you've described.
Well,
it.
I'd have to look to see it in his first step. Because the first step sets up everything in the infield. You know, if you get the right first step on the ball, it sets up everything else on the read of the ball. So, you know, I'd have to look at that. But I was very surprised, obviously, like everybody that. But I wasn't, because of the in between hop. And when you get an in between hop, we talked about the short hops and all that. It's a much more difficult ball to consistently catch.
Okay. Yeah. Carmen, you had a question about Panic on the bloop that fell in short right field. You had a question about that.
Yeah, I was just wondering why Panic broke towards second instead of kind of going for the pop-up, because it looked like he should have made it either way, but just curious about kind of what went on behind that.
Yeah, well, I think it was the Italian-Venezuelan was hitting. It was a hit-and-run guy there, Tochi, how do you say his name?
Tochi
with a man on first. And we know they like to hit-and-run, and you have to make a decision on a hit-and-run. Who's going to cover the bag, the shortstop or the second baseman? And it usually is dictated by the pitch, the location. Is it a breaking ball? Is it a fastball? I would say 75% of the time, when there's a hit and run like that, usually the second baseman covers when the runner starts. So the runner started, Carmen. Mm-hmm. The runner was stealing.
Yep.
And your first responsibility is to get to second base. Now, you like to hold your ground as long as possible, but he did a good job at that. He did side shuffles, and when the ball went up, he was closer to second, but he was able to change his direction and go back and get the ball, and he just wasn't quick enough to get to the pop-up. And that's what the hit-and-run does. It gets fielders out of positions, and you know, the hitter tries to shoot the ball where the infielder is vacated, and you know, it was a pop-up that we just couldn't get. So he did everything right. It was just a matter of that ball falling in a spot that we couldn't get to.
This is why I don't coach, and this is why you do, because you know what's going on.
You're the professor.
Yeah.
No, good question.
Yeah, no, it is, because it to the average fan, obviously there's a lot going on, and you're thinking, yeah, why isn't he there? Why isn't he in position? But that's a difficult play for the infielder, because you want to hold your ground as long as possible, but you have to get to second base. I mean, if he swings and misses, or it's a ball, you know, and now the catcher throws the ball down to second, and you're late, you're not there, mm-hmm. You didn't do your job either. So you're always in a tough spot trying to hold your ground to see where the ball is hit and get to second base to cover on a steal.
See, now, Dwayne Kuiper, of course, teases us all the time, says he listens, he doesn't learn anything. I bet he didn't know that.
I bet he does. I bet he does. And he may take it a step further and say, well, maybe the shortstop should have been covering on that play. You know, and Dyson's a sinker baller. He was missing arm side. And it's more likely that he's going to pull the ball. It's not an easy ball to hit to the right side of the field when that ball's sinking on you. So, yeah, it was an unfortunate play in the game. And, you know, you give them credit for trying something, get something going, and it worked.
Good baseball. That's what we like on Sunday morning. Yeah. It's good to learn that. That's why we have the professor here. Go to school with him, as Sam Kennison likes to say. You want to be part of the discussion, huh, Mr. Helper? All right. I love it. Justin Verlander got in the news this week. And he went for lunch down in Beverly Hills at an exclusive restaurant. And they knew him in there. And, of course, he had lunch there, or breakfast, pancakes $30, salad $40. And, you know, it came out to about $200 for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they brought him the bill. And the bill was for $1,200,000. They put in an extra $1,000,000 because he kills the Dodgers. Miscellaneous charge. So they ended up comping him on the meal, obviously, but it was kind of funny. So my question to you is, you know, you've been around, you've been all over the world and traveled and all that. Most expensive meal you've ever gotten involved with, and how did that happen?
Well, I think it was when I was in Hawaii and I was dating Lori, right? We were just dating, and she wanted to take me to dinner. You're not going to like this, but she wanted to take me to dinner. So I go to the restaurant, I ordered the tiger prawns, right? The most expensive. No, I didn't. I'm just joking. Most expensive meal. I've always wanted to go to the French Laundry.
Okay,
you talk about expensive meals. It's right up the road. We live 40 minutes from there. And I haven't gone yet because I just can't bring myself to spend that kind of money on a meal. We eat good here. I mean, our cooks are tremendous. And we eat at restaurants all the time. And, I think years ago, probably I spent a lot more on meals, but now, I mean, shoot, if I eat at the clubhouse and you're eating on the road all the time, sometimes I just want a burger from Shake Shack, you know, but, I do want to try the French Laundry. I don't know if you guys want to try it as well. I think that'd be well worth the money to spend to go up there. Now, I don't think, hopefully the bill will not be $1,000,000, because I'm not paying if it's $1,000,000.
Carmen, you'd go?
100%. Yeah.
Allie?
I've been wanting to go.
They're in. All right.
Yeah,
you know, there's
great.
A place right across the street from the park called Cezanne that is also a Michelin star restaurant. And
really?
Yeah. And it's really, really good. And it's about 20 courses. And
really?
They tell you all about, where the milk from the cow comes from. The cow's name is like Fabrice, and he lives in Napa.
Okay.
Give you a whole story. So
really,
yeah,
really, you get to know the name of the cow. I don't know if I want to know the name of the cow, but
too much information.
The 20 courses with some wine pairing sounds perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So I can do that. I enjoy that tremendously when you have an opportunity to do that. So well, that sounds good.
Yeah, Verlander had fun with it. That was
amazing.
He had fun with it, and that's part of he's an interesting guy. Married Kate Upton.
Yeah,
a big World Series hero and all that kind of stuff. He's had quite a career.
Yes, he has, and quite
a
pitcher.
You saw him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We saw him up close and personal many times. And, you know, thank goodness we beat him in the biggest games we had to beat him. But he's kind of taken off again with Houston. I mean, there was a situation there with Detroit near the end. It was a losing team. And, you know, when you're on a losing team, nobody seems to be as good or have the years that they've had in the past, and sometimes that's kind of what happens is why you lose, you know. And when you're around winning teams and talented teams, it seems to bring out the best in people.
Yeah, and it has for him. He's done very well.
He's done very good over there.
But Sandoval got him.
Yes, he did multiple times.
How about
did he
that?
Not? Yeah. What a day for him.
Huh?
What a day. We had some great performances. You know, we had the 2010 reunion. I know you guys spoke about yesterday. You just smile ear to ear when you get to see the guys again. You know, you won. You accomplished your goal. You slept good all winter. There's no pointing fingers. No one had a bad year. There's no negativity. It's just all pure joy. And it's so great to see everybody. And what a great bunch of guys. When they come back and you see them again and you start thinking about the personalities and the way they played the game, how hard they played the game, the passion, Pat Burrell here yesterday, all the things that he did. to try to get his teammates to play the game. And he did a great job for us.
You know, you said something to me after that series, and I'll repeat it, how you analyzed the Phillies a little bit. And Carmen brought something up yesterday, and Allie did as well. You know, that Philly team had been to the World Series twice.
Right.
They had won the World Series, and they lost the World Series. And then the next year, even after 2010, they were back in the playoffs. And they had loaded up with Cliff Lee and Oswald and Halliday and all this kind of stuff. And you said something. When you got in that series and Cody Ross got Halliday right away, you said it was like a boxing match, and you hit him in the jaw, and they never recovered. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, well, you know, that's how big those moments are in the playoffs. I think that we were loose, you know, we were the underdogs. No one gave us a chance, and that's motivation in itself. And then to get on top and to do that to their best pitcher, you know, we made a statement. And, you know, the guys played great, and we were that good. Obviously, we went on to win the World Series. That's how talented that team was, and cream rises to the top. Speaking of cows and milk, the cream rises to the top always, and we played our best ball through the playoffs and into the World Series.
Yeah, amazing. And the other, we had Kane on as well, and he talked about Lincecum. And two things. One, I'm sorry Lincecum wasn't there yesterday.
I know.
Who knows why or whatever.
Right.
But
right.
Wait till this guy comes back here. Can you imagine?
Yeah, he's definitely a fan favorite. People love Timmy. They love to see him. You know, a personality, just a different. Well, his nickname was the Freak. Right, he came in here a little different, throwing the way he threw with his frame, opposite of Joey Gallo, and to be able to accomplish the things that he accomplished. He was something else at the beginning of his career. Every time he went out, you thought it was going to be a no-hitter. I mean, you really did. You know, Boach, he finally had a chance to put his feet up on the bench and just watch, because he was that dominant.
Yeah, again, when he shows up, the place will go nuts.
Yeah.
That will be something. But
no
Kane
question.
Kane said something also, that Kane had lost the Friday night game, the San Diego. And Zito, of course, lost on Saturday and took Jonathan Sanchez to have the game of his life
right.
to win the division for you. And Kane said it put a lot of pressure on him when the playoffs started. He tried too hard.
Really?
Because he was upset about Friday night. That
yeah.
he didn't finish it. And again, I guess I bring it up for the competitor. Of
right.
Matt Kane. You look at 105 wins in his career. It's unbelievable. It should be 150. But what a competitor.
No question about it. And it's great to hear those insights, you know, 10 years down the road that he tried too hard. Because it happens to a lot of players, right? They care too much. You care so much and you want to do good. You want to do so good that you just don't play as relaxed and confident as you possibly can. And yeah, he's always been a great competitor and has done tremendous things for us. I looked at the rest of the guys that were there yesterday, you know, the Torreses and Edgar Renteria and Freddie Sanchez and the competitors, every one of them. You know, that's what comes back to your mind when you see him again, the way they played the game. What a great group of guys.
Yeah, very good. It was interesting to see him. Come on, Freddie Sanchez with the doubles off of Cliff Lee. How
right.
about that?
Yeah.
Cliff Lee was untouchable.
Yeah.
Cliff Lee, I remember Tom Grieve. I love Tom Grieve, you know, the broadcaster. Ben Grieve's dad for the Texas Rangers. He came in and said, "Where do you see Cliff Lee? He puts it here, you know,
right.
in quadrants."
Right.
Greg Papa said, "Cliff Lee is the greatest World Series pitcher ever."
Right.
And boom, goodbye.
He was at the top of his game.
Wasn't
I mean, and Freddie's a guy that's, you know, not as atypical as today. He could hit, right?
Yeah.
He hit over 300. I think one year he was flirting with the batting title for average. Line drive hitter, you know, it's not this launch angle, get the ball in the air, line drive. And that was his strength. He played a good second base, but he was a tough out, and he put that ball in play.
Good move.
Yeah.
He had the doubles record for the Pirates.
Right.
And I told him, I said, you know who record you broke? It was Adam Komorowski from like 1934. Of course, he looked at me, you know. Gary Hughes loved that story, you know. Gary Hughes brought me an Adam Komorowski baseball card from the 30s.
Really?
Just because I brought that up on the air.
No relation to Kuzminoff, the third baseman with San Diego.
Not at all.
Okay.
Remember him, Kevin Kuzminoff?
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
good. So your friends in Hawaii are listening this morning? Well,
absolutely. You know, my thoughts go out to them. I mean, hit with that hurricane. and all that rain and flooding. I know the Big Island's been hit the worst, as people know. But Mike Phillips, you had him on here, owns Coconut Restaurants in Maui and Kihei. And thank goodness they didn't get hit as hard. They have some flooding, but they're in decent shape. There still is some flooding, and it's not over yet. They have a few more days of rain. They figure that rain's going to stick around for quite a while. But the people on the Big Island are really suffering with all the water they got.
Well, growing up in Florida, I know that feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Believe me, I've been through it many times with the hurricanes in Miami.
Right.
But their Little League team is doing quite well, huh?
Yes. Pulling for them. They're playing South Korea today, I believe, in Williamsport for the championship. They won the U.S. championship. The Hawaiians did. They love their baseball. You know, we used to go, I think I mentioned on the show, Dwayne Carrizo, one of our owners here with the Giants. You know, he put together that Hawaiian Winter League. He helped finance that with Major League Baseball. And they had that where it lasted a while. It's not there anymore. But I love baseball, love sports, always bringing sports to the islands. And we used to go with Dusty Baker for about 6 years. He'd bring us back in the winter and we do a clinic. And they come from all the islands and we do it on Oahu. At University of Hawaii, great turnouts. The coaches, the players, they love their baseball. I'm so happy for them to be where they're at, and hopefully they win that thing today.
Well, they've had a few Hawaiian players, right? Sid Fernandez,
Victorino,
right?
Victorino.
Mike Lum.
Agbayani.
Okay.
Mike Lum.
Yeah.
I should know more. Well, Kurt Suzuki.
I know
he currently does camps and clinics in Maui for the kids down there. Yeah, there's quite a few.
Now, who?
Colton Wong.
There you go.
Go ahead, Allie. You're on. Go ahead.
Colton Wong's from the Big Island.
Oh, very good. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
And right. Colton may even have been, when his family was here, I tried to ask his family if he went to those camps and clinics, and I didn't talk to Colton. When I go to St. Louis, I'm going to try to speak to him because I want to say that he might have been at one of those camps that Dusty Baker used to run.
Yeah, let me tell you something. Colton Wong is one of the main reasons they've had that turnaround.
Yeah.
He's played great ball defensively. He's hitting the ball well. And,
yeah,
he's been a big part of the Cardinal. Take a look at your September schedule. I don't know if you've taken a look at it yet. We'll come back to it as we do another show. You got quite a schedule of September of the Cardinals,
right.
The Brewers, Atlanta.
Yeah,
and the whole West, and they're going to be fighting. This is no picnic, believe me.
No, it's not. But that's it'll be fun to play those teams. Look, you want to win as many games as you can, and those teams will be fighting for a position as well. So that's what you want. That's the baseball you want to play.
Yeah, usually September's a lot of the West, but you got other action in here.
Yeah, the schedule's a little bit different.
Isn't it weird?
Yeah, I think I prefer to say more in the West that time of year, especially the last 2 weeks. Weeks of the season. I mean, you have to go to an American League club or play teams outside your division, and it's the interleague when you have to go play an interleague game in the last 2 weeks of the season. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right.
Let's go back to the Little League for a second. Then it's an exciting day today for the young kids from Hawaii. Did you play Little League?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What position did you play?
Well, I was shortstop, pitcher.
Okay. Like you were the big star.
Well, I was pretty good. I was probably better then than I was here in the major leagues. But, most of your better players are playing short, right, and they're pitching. I never caught, though. I never caught in a Little League game. A lot of good players catch. Short and pitch. And, that's my heyday, Marty. Little League, come on. Are you kidding me?
Did you hit it out? Did you ever hit one out?
Yeah, you hit it through the shortstop's legs. It goes between the outfielders, and you keep running. We didn't have any fences where I played. We're out in the cow pastures.
Very good. Do you watch this Little League World Series at all? I don't know if you have any thoughts about it.
Well, I haven't watched this one, but when it's on, I'll watch it for a little bit. And I like to listen to Dave Fleming make the call at the Little League World Series. And it's just interesting to see the teams and how they play and the antics that go on with the players. You know, things evolve. They keep evolving in the game, and the kids pick up on what the major leaguers do. And they bring it into their Little League game, and so they have all the handshakes and the celebrations, and I keep an eye on it.
Yeah, the parents are always something. That's the big issue. you know, and coaching Little League is dealing with the parents.
And, right,
you
know. Right. Well, we used to do camps and clinics, myself with Eric Johnson and Joe Millett in East Bay. We used to work with 20 Little Leagues where we would train the Little League coaches, and not the players, but the coaches on how to coach the kids. And we covered everything. It just wasn't the skills. It was, you know, how to teach, how to a progression of coaching, you know, how to interact with the kids, how do you set up practice, because those are really the big things. And you're right. You know, most of the parents, a lot of them volunteer. They don't know anything about baseball, but they want to help, and they should want to help. And then you have the career Little League coaches that have strong opinions on how everything should be done. So I think it's refreshing then when you can go out there and try to help the coaches and keep them current to, of what's going on, and help them with their communication skills and how to interact with the kids, because that's the biggest thing. And as you say, you know, I find myself, I go watch my great-nephew play up now in Santa Rosa, and he's my great-nephew, and my blood starts boiling when the umpire makes a bad call or he's not being treated right. So it's a tough thing for a parent to watch their kids play and keep their mouth shut. So I understand it, but, you know, it's best to zip it and let them play and perform and enjoy it.
It's not easy. Some parents have to sit out in a car in center field and watch.
That's right. Oh, has that happened to you?
I'm thinking back just to, and I think it was Buddy Bell or talking about his dad, Gus Bell. I think I did the interview with, Gus Bell is a great outfielder. And I think Buddy Bell said, my grandpa, and David Bell said, the grandpa had to sit out in the outfield, you know, because he couldn't come close enough. They wouldn't let him.
Absolutely.
If I'm not mistaken, I think it was the Bell family.
Well, he would not be alone, right? He would not be alone.
Hey, so let's go back to Hawaii for a second. What happened to the tiger prawns?
Oh, they were real good. They were very good, Marty.
And Lori ended up paying for the whole dinner?
She paid for the dinner, yeah. Well, then I married her, so she made out okay on that.
Very good. All right, it is Players Weekend. Let's take a break now. I want to get your thoughts about Players Weekend and some of the things going on around baseball. This Jose Arcia had the best yet. With Jose Aguilar and all the little antics that are going on in the dugout now. You hit a home run now, you never know what's going to happen in the dugout. So this is what baseball is getting into. But let's chat with the professor right after this.
This is Evan Longoria of the San Francisco Giants. Now back to the Giants pregame show with Marty Lurie on KNBR 680.
All right, nice to have you back with us on this Sunday morning. The professor Ron Wotus is here, Allie Williams, Carmen Q, and me as we get ready for baseball. The professor, it's Players Weekend, so kind of interesting. How you doing with it?
I'm fine with it. It's been a little difficult playing Texas during this weekend because I don't know their guys over there, and I'm trying to look at the back of their shirts when a pinch hitter comes out and they have these nicknames. I don't know who's who. So, but the names are interesting. It's fun. I think it's a good thing for baseball. I think the fans like it. You guys would know better than me. But you get to learn a little bit about the players, you know, most of them. Some of them are maybe over the top or a little bit different, but I think it breaks up the long season and gives you some points of interest.
You know, some of the names that have come up and MLB listed sort of the top 10 that they thought, I'll give you a couple of them. Boxberger for Arizona, he has the emoji of a box and a burger.
Okay.
I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, that's good.
Pretty good. Ender Enciarte, game ender.
Right.
You saw that one?
I saw that one, and I'm wondering, obviously the box burger, that's not his nickname, but the player's taking it to another level to have fun with it because I don't know what his nickname is, but Game Ender, that might be his nickname. Who knows? Guys might obviously call him that.
Pence is underpants.
Yeah, I know.
And when he first got here, I think the story of Kruko, one of Kruko's grandchildren, someone said, who is he? Underpants?
Right.
And I think that's how that came about.
Right. He said, if you say my name real quickly, it sounds like underpants.
Right. Yeah. Brad Hand, protein shake.
I don't get that one.
Right.
I don't,
Carmen, you want to explain that?
Yeah. Can somebody explain
it? I don't know why he's protein shake, right, but it's funny.
It's kind of his name,
like
Brad.
Protein shake.
Brad,
you know?
Hand or something.
I thought
he's
thing
a
thing myself. He's okay. You know, Thing from the Addams Family?
Very good. That would be a good one.
That's what I call him when
good,
I see him.
Very good. All right. Edwards, the little thin lefty. String bean slinger.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's a good one.
That's good. That brings a smile to your face when you see that.
Yeah. Paul Fry. Papa Frita.
Yeah.
French fries.
Yeah.
Carmen, explain this one. Guacamole?
Guacamole, yeah. It's for Michael Wacha. He must like guacamole because it's, you know, he posted it and put some avocado emojis there. So.
You sure it's not whack-a-mole?
I'm pretty sure, just based on...
Allie, whack-a-mole, post. Maybe?
I think either's fine.
Oh, so good. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, good. See, Allie's
Instagram,
on my...
I have an Instagram post to corroborate what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. All right. You know what I mean?
Yasmanian Devil for Grandal.
Yasmanian okay.
Devil. Oh, Yasmanian Devil.
Yeah.
Well... I don't believe that his teammates take the time to say all that. Yasmanian Devil, do they? I mean,
is yours just whoa?
Yeah, short and sweet and quick, right?
All right.
Yeah. Usually a nickname, you shorten a guy's name, don't you? A little bit?
Yeah.
Or put a little E on the end of it.
A little E, or yeah.
Something like
a
that.
A mole, so. I guess.
How about Jerry Blevins? I like this one. Jerry Springer.
Yeah.
I thought that was maybe my favorite.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that. And the guy in center field, I saw his. The guy, Pico de Gallo.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very good. Yeah. I didn't see that.
You didn't see
that
one?
My guy?
Yeah, that's your guy.
All right.
Well, they're Rennell's, when he comes to home plate, that's how they're announcing him.
Oh, is that? I didn't notice that yesterday.
Joey Pico de Gallo.
Very good. Baseball, all that's going on in baseball, you know, we have this weekend, but even aside from this, the home run, guy hits a home run now, comes in the dugout, the Yankees make believe they're going to interview him, they have a water bottle that's a microphone, they got that, Joey Gallo does a stare down when people come in, the whole team of Houston, Carmen, right, the whole team of Houston.
Yeah. They swivel their heads and stare.
And stare at the guy after he's hit a home
it's
run.
It's pretty funny, actually.
You know, all this is going on. I don't know. What do you think about it? Do you guys do anything like that?
Well, yeah. I mean, we probably do more. I'm not in the dugout when the home runs are hit, so I'm not seeing as much of what's going on now that I'm at third base coach. And I think every year it gets more and more interesting, I guess you should say.
Creative
is the right word. You know, I mean, you want the guys to be loose and you want them to enjoy themselves. And this is the way they do it. You know, when they hit a home run, they enjoy themselves. The other big moment for them is before the game, when they get ready for the game, the handshakes, right? The handshakes are, if you put the camera in the dugout then, you'll be entertained as well, because I see some of these things these guys are doing with each other, and I'm laughing or I'm shaking my head. I just can't believe it. But that's what they're doing. So that's what they're doing. You know, we just got to win games, because when you do all that stuff and you don't win, it's probably not as entertaining as it should be.
Now, do you have a hand slap at third? Have you developed
low five,
high five? Where are you on this?
Yeah. Well, I keep it low to the ground because I have a hard time raising my right shoulder. So I keep it down low. But if it's a big home run, I go with the left hand high five.
Okay.
And I did it for Hunter yesterday.
Okay.
He hit the home run. I went with my left hand, and he gave me a high five. I'm trying to keep it simple. I've had many people, believe me, tell me you need to do this, you need to do that with a little bit of flair. I know, you know, I think Nev even did it. Phil Nevin in New York, the football handoff. But I'm a little more reserved. I haven't brought myself to do any of that stuff at
you
this
do
point.
You.
I'm doing me. You know, I've been around a long time, and all these things keep changing and evolving. And winning the game is the most important thing to me. And look, you got to have fun. There's a balance, right, in this game. You got to have fun. But I always felt that. You know, there's a lot at stake. We're professionals, and the entertainment side is not the main focus for me as the athlete. I'm not the entertainer. I'm the athlete.
Yeah, it's that. Well, baseball's trying to do that. You know, they're trying to get it going. So that's what they're trying to do.
Well, yeah, and that's the sign of the times, and the people responding to it, and the people are loving it. I look up in the stands. I see women. I see old men. They're all flossing up there, right? It's that little dance.
I'm surprised you know what that is.
Well, how could you not? Everywhere you go, you see it.
It was
right?
Dabbing last year.
What was it?
Dabbing.
I didn't even know that existed, so that's where I'm at. But I see the flossing.
And you guys do celebration poses at the end. I know the outfielders do that. And then the Brandons have their turkey tap.
They have their what?
Yeah. Don't even start. Let him explain it to you when you go in the locker room.
All right, I'll ask him about it.
Really? Yeah, you can ask
just
him.
Just stand
about
back
it.
When you ask him. That's amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought one of the best entertaining things that I saw on this whole list, and it's Sunday morning, we have fun with this stuff with, well, I appreciate your playing along with all this stuff. Derek Bell. Remember Derek Bell, the outfielder?
Yeah.
I think he was playing in Tampa or one of the places, and they had a giveaway for a fan. A lucky fan got an SUV after the sixth inning, and they brought the SUV out. They called the name, and guy got the SUV, and it was Derek Bell's car.
Oh.
They gave his car away.
Did they really?
Yes.
That's good.
Come on.
Yeah.
They gave his car away.
Oh, wow.
So that was that one.
Yeah.
What can I tell you? We'll wrap it up with you, but I appreciate the time with you today. In the Met game, when the outfielders collided, with the infielder, the outfielder collided, I mean, you know, you're such a fundamental guy. You had to see that one coming. And that was the old 62 Mets. You're in New York.
Right, right. You know? Exactly right. You know, that's a tough one. That's a tough one to live with there at the end because of the communication. That should be a standard fundamental. But, you know, these things happen in baseball. And I think one thing they had going against them was the outfielder, the left fielder, is really a first baseman.
Yeah.
Again, to my point, moving guys around too much, playing them out of position, things like that happen. They show up. And I don't even know if he's been through the drills, the communication as an outfielder or not, you know, how to go about it. So that was, thank goodness for us, that happened. And at least two guys went for the ball. I think it's even worse when, right, the two guys both back off and the ball lands right between them.
Yeah, boy, funny. Last thought, you know, John Miller tells a story perfectly. And back in the 62 Mets, they had an infielder, Elio Chacon, a Latin player, and the center fielder is the old Richie Ashburn.
Okay.
So if a pop fly went up, you know, they would collide with each other, and, you know, it's trouble. So Elio Chacon says, when it goes up, I'll say, YOLO Tango. I got it.
Right.
Right. So you back off. I got it. So fly ball to center field. He's screaming YOLO Tango as he goes back, and he's run over by the left fielder, Frank Thomas, who didn't understand Spanish.
Okay.
And that's the 62 Mets.
That's the 62
And that's what
Mets.
I thought of when I saw that.
Wow. Thing. Yeah. I mean, who would have thunk it, right?
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden the left fielder runs over because he doesn't understand Spanish.
Frank Thomas ran him over.
Well, so to that point, that's why when we go back as an infielder, we wave our arm when we're camped underneath it. And if you're backpedaling at all, drifting on the ball's end, the outfielder is supposed to call you off, but we don't call for it. You do a visual.
Got it.
And you keep your ear open for the outfielder. So it doesn't matter whether you speak Spanish, Japanese, American. You just look for that arm, and then you keep your ears open to listen for the outfielder
very
to call.
Good. Well, a great way to end. That's a very good way to end. Very perfect. Good. Yeah, perfect with the professor. Hey, I enjoyed it. A lot of fun this morning.
I enjoyed it as well. A little bit out of my my expertise, but
come on, we got you going in the French Laundry. We're all going there.
Okay, that I'm on board with. I'll pay for that.
We had
meal.
Somebody from Keen's, which is another restaurant that is, I think, Michelin starred, reach out on Twitter and say it's only $2.75 a person here versus $1,000, and you can come check it out.
Oh,
all
really?
Right, set that up, Carmen.
We'll look into that.
All right. Well, have a great afternoon.
Thank you. It was good seeing y'all.
And we'll see you next Sunday. Mets are here next Sunday, so we get to go next Sunday.
Look
as well.
Forward to that.
All right, that is the third base coach. I almost said it. Third base coach of the San Francisco Giants, Ron Wotus. More coming up on the Sports Leader.